Because really, our journey of spirituality is a coming home to ourselves.
Exactly.
There's something so tangible and so human about our spiritual experience. I know it can be related to in very like esoteric terms, yet it is very much in our humanity that we discover our spirituality.
Hi, everyone. I'm Natalia Ochoa, and I was so inspired to create this podcast because I want to share a piece of wisdom that I'm integrating into my life currently. We all have the ability to create our own reality in which we can heal ourselves. Hopefully, through the conversations I'm passionately sharing, you'll discover the power of your own intuition.
Hi, everyone. I am so thrilled for today's guest. When I was preparing for this interview, I was reading back on my notes when I went on this retreat with Carolyn. It was about a year and a half ago, and it was so crazy how I got aligned to go on this Mallorca trip with her. So basically, I got this crazy astrology read, and she had told me that I had this deep connection to the ley lines, and I literally had no idea what ley lines were. I'm like, what is she talking about? So I sent it to my best friend, the reading, and she listened to it. And literally the day after, she takes a yoga class in Boston from Carolyn, and Carolyn says, hello, everyone, I'm doing a yoga retreat in Mallorca, Spain, and we're going to be uncovering ley lines. And my best friend literally called me. She was like, we need to do this. I was like, signs from the universe, done. And oh my God, it was so unbelievably worth it. She truly is a master at what she does. I think that that experience was a complete turning point, if not one of the biggest catapults to my awakening journey, because it happened at a time where I was going through a lot of transformation and really understanding and letting go of my old belief systems and really understanding what it is that having a spiritual awakening or growth process is like, right? I'm like, what are ley lines? What is energy? Like, what is this stuff? And she was so integral because she really talked about the subconscious mind. And she brought to surface so easily, and she held such beautiful space for just these limiting beliefs and thoughts that I just really didn't even know that were there. And I mean, we were in like the most beautiful estate in Mallorca with, oh my God, so amazing. And if you listen to my solo episode, you know, I talked about where I put blood on my face and I got connected to my period blood and like who I am as a woman. And Carolyn is the person that did that. And she has been an integral part in me really changing the way that I look at myself. So I am so grateful for her. And now we're great friends and she's doing amazing things. And I'm so excited to bring her on because we're really going to talk about the subconscious mind and how we can really dig into what it is that our brain is actually trying to tell us and communicate to us and where that lies and why it's so important to bring it up and just start really changing the subconscious brain in order to live a life of fulfillment and passion, something that makes you happy no matter what area of life you're in. So a little bit about Carolyn. Carolyn Little is a transformational life coach and a yoga meditation teacher who has dedicated over 20 years of her life to the pursuit of holistic well-being through healing, embodiment, social justice, and spiritual growth. Carolyn has had the privilege to work with thousands of people in trainings and retreats around the world, as well as in Fortune 500 companies. She is a board-certified holistic health practitioner, 1,000-plus-hour registered yoga teacher, and Reiki master. She has completed trainings in positive intelligence and mindfulness, meditation, and holds a graduate degree in social justice in intercultural relations, which allows Carolyn to provide a very unique approach to health and well-being as she guides you to the most rewarding journey of self-realization, so you can discover your true power, purpose, and passion. I definitely know that that's what she did for me. So let's dig in. Without further ado, here's Carolyn. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Natalia.
How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really happy to be here with you right now.
Oh my God, me too. I'm so honored to have you on today. I was just saying how working with you when we went to Mallorca, that trip was so much fun.
Oh, we had an incredible time. It was truly such a journey.
Oh my God. It was like, so basically Carolyn hosted a retreat in Mallorca in like this beautiful estate. And it was so magical. Just everything from
the food. Like, we have to talk about like the food that we ate. It was like, well, what program did you use? Was it like Garden to Table?
Yeah, it was a Farm to Table. It was a local chef that was from the island of Mallorca. So he was super skilled in not only creating these beautiful, healthy culinary dishes, but also of traditional Mallorquin cuisine. So yeah, it was pretty phenomenal. Yeah.
His name was Rafael, and we were all orgasming as we ate all of his food.
Absolutely. It was the full sensory experience and how we could tap into that pleasure in everything. So it was a big part of that.
I love that. I to this day, I still don't think that I have tasted food as good as that. And at some point in the episode, I'm going to put some clips from when we were doing that. And so y'all can get a little taste of what we were tasting.
It will be fun.
It will be fun. Oh my God. So yeah. So I wanted to talk, well, first of all, I wanted to ask you, because every experience for every person is different. So what would you say that your spiritual awakening journey was like for you?
I love this question. And I also love hearing this from so many people as well. For me, there wasn't necessarily like one spectacular event that really opened things or shifted things. It was a series of events in my life, you know, starting from the fact that I grew up in a pretty unstable household. There were a lot of challenges. My parents loved us, of course, but my dad was a Vietnam vet who went into corporate America. My mom was a teacher. There is a history of addiction abuse in my family. And so there were moments when I was young, probably in middle school, that I remember that I would leave the house and go down the road and lay in this field and just be with the stars and just be with this force that I didn't know how to explain back then, but it was definitely greater than me. And it was where I found the sense of solace. And that's really where I started, you know, a conversation with something greater than myself. And you know, I also was raised in the Presbyterian church. So I grew up Christian, going to church, and outside of the community, it just didn't resonate with me so much. So, you know, I just bring that up because alongside this in my life, you know, religion didn't have so much of a place. I feel like that's where my spiritual exploration started. And then it continued on with just numerous different events of following my intuition and moving to some spectacular places and tapping into nature there and just noticing the people who really truly are angels in our lives that show up at those times and that are such gifts. So there's lots more stories that could come from there.
Oh my God. I was getting chills when you were saying that because I had a similar experience. Like I remember that when things would get too intense in my house, I would go to a park and I would put my feet on the ground and I would look. I was always so connected to the moon. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what the connection was, but I just would look at the moon and I would just say, you know, just allow kind of everything to fill me with peace. So yeah, I resonate a lot with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm actually curious what your thoughts are, because I know that sometimes people think that there isn't a difference between spirituality and religion. What would you say that your main difference is? Because I grew up Catholic and I have the same thing. Like when I was in the church, it never resonated with me. I remember being 12 and being like, this doesn't feel right. And I just didn't want to go back.
Mm-hmm. Well, there can definitely be aspects of religion that are very spiritual.
Yeah.
And I see that across different religions and I appreciate that immensely. There also is the aspect of religion being the institution.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what turns people off, like, because people think that spirituality is like also being part of an institution, but I feel like it's different, right?
Right. So the way that I would describe the difference of it is that religion is this institution, whereas spirituality is a very individual, personal journey. So everyone has a spiritual connection and they relate to that in their own way.
Yeah.
So that's where I feel the difference for myself and where I notice others also experience it in that way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And then it's funny, people, you know, say the same thing. It's incremental, right? And then, you know, and it happens to me too, that there are just like these incremental moments where things click and sink in much deeper. Were there any moments for you where, or any experiences that you had where it kind of dropped in for you more than understanding that you just had a connection with a higher source or power?
I often found it in connection to nature. So I had the gift of living in Hawaii for a while. And when I was there, yes, living in a VW bus, just totally.
Okay. Well, that's why you found God there.
in some ways, definitely. So there's definitely a thing to certain places in nature. I feel that we can just tap into that feeling so deeply. Mm-hmm. Hawaii was very much one for me. Bali is another one. Certain places in Central and South America that I've been, those have all been moments in my life that have been powerful in tapping into that spirituality and that essence that exists around us all the time. But then there was a point in my life that I never identified myself as being spiritual. Mm-hmm. And this was probably when I was like late teens, you know, in undergrad. And I remember having a conversation with one of my really good friends who reflected back to me just how spiritual I was. And to me, that was like a surprise. I was like, really? And that still holds such a place in my memory, such a simple moment. But it was almost like it gave me permission to sink deeper into that part of myself that really connected with spirituality and wanted to explore what that meant in my life. And so that led to a series of events of connecting with elders from different lineages and tapping into spiritual practices from different cultures and seeing how that also connects with my lineage, my ancestry, and that how some of those cultures that I'm not connected to through my ancestry, how I want to tap into those more. You know?
Yeah. That's why I love studying with so many different people and having a diverse way of learning different things from different people. Because when you know that you're on a spiritual path, you understand that everyone is taking things from completely different places. It's like you won't meet a single spiritual teacher that will have the same, you know, methodology, because it's like whatever you pick up along the way. And about the books, like, I mean, about the, what your friend said, literally, I have the same thing. Like, I'm like, I'm not, like, I was like, and I was like in spiritual denial. I was like, I'm not a spiritual person. And then every single one of my books was about Buddhism, spirituality, mindset, like literally anything that had to do with awakening yourself, or just working on yourself. Or I don't like it that they call it self-help, because it makes it seem like we have a problem, like, as opposed to just like, no, like, remember who you are. Like, that's why you're reading this. It's not to help or fix anything. But anyway.
No, I'm so glad that you just brought that up. I forgot it even used to be called self-help. Because really, our journey of spirituality is a coming home to ourselves.
Exactly.
If there's something so tangible and so human about our spiritual experience. I know it can be related to in very like esoteric terms, yet it is very much in our humanity that we discover our spirituality.
Yeah, exactly. It's a coming home to us. And I never really understood that, like, ever in this process, until I had more books in my life that kind of, and more teachers and more experiences that really like just made it sink deeper and deeper. And now even with the work that I do, it's like, understanding that we're all unconditional love, right? That it's coming back to that sense and kind of just letting go of everything else.
Yeah, I love how the Dalai Lama talks about it, that our spiritual journey is one of cultivating the qualities of compassion mm-hmm. and curiosity, mm-hmm. empathy.
Yes.
And
exactly.
Joy.
Yeah, joy. Oh, perfect. Perfect. So tell us, how do people actually create a happy life?
Very good question.
Yeah, right? Let's get to it.
I mean, it's the question that everyone is asking.
Yeah, everyone just wants to be happy. We all just want the quest for happiness.
Mm-hmm. So we are conditioned in a lot of ways of what happiness, what gaining happiness, what gaining success is in our lives. From the time that we're born. It's in our culture, it comes from our families, and often this quest for happiness exists in these certain accomplishments in our life, right? So we almost have this like checklist of, you know, how happy you're going to be when you graduate from high school, and then you get into the school of your dreams, and then you graduate from the school of your dreams and you get the job of your dreams and then you meet the person of your dreams, and then you have the family of your dreams, and but every time, right, that thing that it's that next check, it's that next goal, where does that put happiness for us?
Yeah.
Right? It's always outside of us. It's always something that we're striving for.
And so external.
It's always external. It's always just beyond our reach. And even when we accomplish those things, we might experience happiness, but it's fleeting because it's like, well, now I have to do the next thing. So happiness in that realm is always outside of us, which makes it very hard for us to actually be in a state of happiness in the moment to moment in our life. So when we look at that on the other side of the coin, you know, what is it to cultivate happiness in our day to day, in our moment to moment? And I believe it's truly a process of coming into all of who you are. That when we embark on this journey of really deconstructing who we are, what are the beliefs that we hold? What have we been conditioned with from our culture, from our families? You know, what in that is even true for me? And how can that, that coming home to oneself creates a contentment. Creates a contentment for where we are. And we start to shift that perspective into finding the happiness in the journey, finding happiness in the day-to-day, in the moments in our lives, rather than in what it is in that next goal and that next accomplishment.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't know if this is true for a lot of people, but I know that for myself, I never resonated with my family's belief systems ever since I was really young. So it was something that when I was little, I didn't fully understand why when my parents would say something to me and I'd be like, wait, but that's, I don't think that's true. And it confused me for a really long time because something inside me, my deeper knowing knew that it was either coming from fear or, definitely based from fear or just shame or guilt or anger. And I felt it and I didn't know how to express that. So, you know, you kind of touched on it, but where do you believe our beliefs come from? And like, how do we differentiate what beliefs are ours and what are the external ones that are put on us?
That's a great question. And, there's parts of doing this work, well, across numerous different methodologies, but looking at part of my background is in social justice and cultural relations. And that work, a lot of that work is deconstructing our societies. How are societies formed? Mm-hmm. How are they maintained? Where is power held? And so a big part of that was also looking at ourselves and doing that self-deconstruction work of who we are, what is our impact when we go to another country? What is our impact when we enter into different groups of people? And so that's just one part of it that I'll speak to. There's also another part that's really rooted in yoga. Mm. And I think this is missed in the West in how we relate to yoga and look at yoga. But that self-study is such a huge foundation of yoga, which really means to yoke, to union, to come into union. Mm. So we have to do that self-deconstruction work in order to understand who we are.
Right.
So in that, it's a process of inquiry. And just like your intuition was showing you, some of these things don't really resonate. And that's a beautiful opportunity to ask yourself, well, what in this is true for me? You know, what do I actually believe this? And I think when we do that check in with ourselves, we realize like, wow, this is something that I heard my parents say a lot of times, or this is a belief that is valued in our culture and reflected back to me so strongly in our culture, but it doesn't actually resonate with me. You know, I think about right now how strong we are ingrained with our value wrapped up in our productivity.
Mm. Oh my God, yeah.
Right? So what we produce equates our value, our worth. The more that we can produce, the more worthwhile we are. Right? So yes, there's all kinds of benefits to what we create, what we produce in the world. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
There also is, we're just so out of balance. So, you know, when I really check in with myself of what I believe, and I'm glad that this has been cultivated too over time, is the value of space, the value of the spaces in between, the value of being able to integrate experiences and not needing to just go to the next one and the next one and the next one.
Yeah. Because you're an entrepreneur, you're a practitioner, you're a healer, you bring this service, right? And recently I saw in your newsletter that you took 2 weeks off and you were like, even like, oh my God, it's like, can I do this? So how was that for you? How was like that process of you just actually deciding? Cause a lot of people that are entrepreneurs or work for themselves, it can be challenging to make that feels like a really long time in this mind that we create for ourselves, right? But how did it feel? And like, how was that?
Yeah, great question. So, one, it was a bit nerve wracking. Yeah.
It's like 2 weeks. Oh my God.
And two, it was just such a wonderful time to practice this literally within the inner space of valuing this time that I'm giving myself, right? And to do it without judging myself or feeling like I'm going to be behind. I know that's the biggest thought that comes in.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm going to be so behind. I'm taking these 2 weeks off before the start of the year. I'm crazy. I'm not going to be set up for this year to come and all this other stuff, right? Whereas, you know, when I really tapped into what I needed, it was the space to integrate everything that we've been through in 2020 and to also get really creative. So I needed to tap into this creative energy. And this is important, especially as entrepreneurs, because this is where true innovation comes out for us. This is when some of our greatest ideas come up. And because we're not confined by this, you know, schedule that we've laid out of everything that has to be done, you know, we have the ability to really get into this innovative, creative energy. Yeah. So I started, you know, just using my hands and creating these beautiful decorations for the holiday. Literally, they were all like based on natural things. So it was really fun.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. It was beautiful. I'm a witness. It was great. Yeah. And it's all the things that we want to do. It's like that's why we're alive. That's why we want to live our life, to be just tapped into that flow, you know? And now as I'm, you know, doing that, it's the same thing. When I left my nonprofit, I was just like, oh my God, I have to like start the next thing like right away. Like I have to know exactly what I'm doing. And like, I gave myself like a month of just downtime, and every moment I was just like, I couldn't even believe that I was doing that. I've never allowed myself a month of just rest. I think that after we get out of school, there isn't that period of, you know, summer vacation. And I felt so guilty, but the most beautiful like inspirations happened in that moment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It was like I delved deep into so many things. I was getting such clear messages of what to do next because I allowed myself to rest.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. Yes. Because that's exactly what we have the opportunity for mm-hmm. when we release the burden of this pressure of exactly. what we think we should be doing.
Exactly.
That pressure that we put on ourselves when we come into all these like shoulds, you know?
Yeah, the should. The shoulds are the worst. I've been working on the shoulds with my therapist for like 2 years. Like no more shoulds. There's no more shoulds.
I'm sure you've heard this saying, stop shoulding on yourself.
Yeah, no, 100%. Going back to the whole belief system, where do you think that comes from? The us thinking about the shoulds?
Well, it's wrapped up into that same conditioning
of productivity
expectations and of what our definition is of success. So that's often where I start with a lot of clients when we begin working together is deconstructing what is your definition of success?
That's
how
huge.
That drive your decisions and your behaviors in life. And is that really true?
And I know that you also touch on the differences between the analytical mind and the intuitive heart, because I feel like in those moments, it can be challenging to understand what the difference is from the messages that you're receiving from your heart versus your mind. So how can we know the difference of those?
That takes practice. It really takes practice.
It does.
The time for us to cultivate the ability to listen in and to feel. So we can feel when there is something that is coming from our heart. We feel it viscerally in our body. The analytical mind is great for us figuring out logistics and, you know, all the planning things and stuff like that in life. It serves a very useful purpose.
Totally.
But it's not what we want necessarily calling the shots.
Right. And it does. In this society, we're like only taught to use our analytical mind and just to be like, oh, you feel something? Like, don't trust it. Like, we don't trust what we feel in our hearts. It's like, it's such a big thing that I've had to deconstruct for myself.
Mm-hmm. And you think about it, you know, listening to your body and cultivating that ability purely from, you know, the saying, listen to your gut. Mm-hmm. Your gut knows. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your gut response?
Mm-hmm. Or and listen to your heart.
Right, exactly. And when we often get ourselves in trouble is when we don't listen.
Yeah. Oh yeah, 100%.
We've all done it, you know. We've all done it numerous times.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that's a form of control and also gripping? I know that's with some of the people that I'm working with, they're just having such a difficult time. They receive messages so clearly and they just decide to not go with it and their analytical mind takes over. I know you said that it takes practice, but is there any other piece of advice for people that are first starting on this aspect of really like paying attention to both? Like, what does that feel for you, like in your body and stuff like that, if you can get a little bit more specific?
So it also goes hand in hand with cultivating our own self-trust. So if we're going to listen to ourselves and listen to these messages that are coming through in order to take those action steps in relationship to those messages, we need to trust ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that comes through practice and trying things. And also it's helpful to acknowledge when we've made decisions that we've trusted our gut that maybe others are telling us to do something else, you know? And when we've said, no, I really feel this, I'm going to make this decision. And so acknowledging the moments when we do that, I think is really important.
Yeah, I agree.
Because that's how we start to build that self-trust of like, oh, I did it this time and I did it this time and this is how it turned mm-hmm. out.
Yeah, for sure.
So for me, I feel there's different visceral things. I pay attention a lot to the tension in my body. So when I'm in my analytical mind or I'm in that place of shoulding, putting that pressure on myself, I'm usually really tense. And if I can bring myself to the awareness to even notice that tension,
yeah,
then I have the ability to take a breath, take a step back, create a little distance around the situation, whatever I'm trying to figure out, and meet it from a new perspective.
Yeah, and that does take a lot of practice, definitely, because you have to just become extremely aware of what's actually happening in your body. Where I feel like there's a big disconnect right now between us actually knowing what's going on with our internal bodies and trusting people outside of us to tell us the answers.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's one way that a lot of us have been conditioned is to, you know, in our medical system of putting all of our trust into doctors and yes, listen to their expertise and know your body.
Exactly.
Learn your body.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that with anything with doctors, like I always go in and I listen, but at the end of the day, I know that my body, if it's going to have a negative reaction to something, like I need to listen to my body, definitely. And it's always led me in the right direction. Where do you think it comes from for us not to trust ourselves? Do you think that that's a generational thing? Do you think that comes from childhood or from society? What is this aspect? Because I keep on seeing it again and again with more clients, like that they can't tap into their intuition because they don't trust themselves.
Mm-hmm. I do think that there's a big piece of that in our formative years, depending on the environment in which we were raised.
That makes a lot of sense.
And yeah, so when we're really young, if we're given the space to express our emotions and if our parents are asking us to, you know, explain where those, like, what's that emotion about? What are you, you know, really getting curious about what is happening at that moment for that child also validates that for the child. Wrong. So, I mean, that's one example how that conditioning can come up. Because let's say, for instance, a child is really upset and crying, and a parent is like, oh, just stop crying, you're fine.
Right. Right.
So instantly that tells the child, well, what I'm experiencing isn't valid. I just need to be fine. So they cut that part of themselves off and do what needs to be done in order to get the approval of the parent in that moment.
That makes a lot of sense. Then because in our culture, we're just conditioned to just say, hey, you know what? Like, don't feel bad.
Right.
Don't feel bad. You feel bad? Feel good. Like, no, what? Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So with that, I know that something that you went over with us in Mallorca was the four different roles that children take from like age 0 to 7. Can you take us through that? Because that's, I remember loving that.
Yeah, definitely. So before I get into those four roles, it's helpful to understand that when we come into this world as a baby, we are wide open. We are just taking in everything around us. There's an awe, there's a wonderment, there's a curiosity.
Yeah.
And that's our natural state as human beings. Mm-hmm. So as we're starting to grow into little beings, into toddlers and children, through certain experiences with our family, our main goal is to receive the attention and the affection that we need. So when that doesn't happen, and it's not by fault, it could be an environment for a child that is harmful and challenging, but it doesn't even need to be some big event.
Right. Because I think sometimes people think that it has to be this like physical abuse or just like something extreme, but it could be something as simple as parents just negating child's like emotional needs.
Right. Exactly. And so, you know, there are experiences of great trauma, and then there's also others that are not that traumatic, but like I said, when we're that wide open, we don't have the analytical mind yet that has formed to say, oh, my parent is really stressed over this thing because trying to do it work. So therefore, you know, they can't give me the attention that I need right now. We just take it as rejection.
Right.
So we start to, this is the development of our ego. So our ego starts to form in those first 7 years of our life. And that ego forms in order for our survival. So we start to learn certain ways of how to be in the world in order to get our fundamental needs met. So that ends up forming four roles, essentially, that we take on as children. And so one is being the gifted one. Another one is being the victim or sick. Mm-hmm. Another one is the caregiver. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is the rebel.
Mm. Can you take us a little explanation of each one, of what it means?
Sure. So the gifted one is the child who learns that as long as they're doing everything right, they're going to get the praise and the approval that they desire. So, for instance, if someone in that situation grew up in an unstable household where things were pretty just traumatic, but they know that for them, things are okay as long as they get straight A's and that they are the head of every club and the captain of every team, then their world is safe.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. That
does
make sense.
So it's similar with like the victim. So someone would take on the victim persona or being sick, knowing that they're going to get that attention from whoever it is that they want that attention from. The caregiver is someone who maybe grew up with a family who the parents were dealing with some kind of real challenge, addiction, illness. And so the child learned at a very young age that they needed to take care of others. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to assume that role later on in life as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's me.
Yeah, it gives us our value. I also want to point out that there's two sides to it. It ends up being one, our superpower, and also our greatest trap.
Yes. Yeah. I know. You're telling me.
And then the fourth one is the rebel. And I think we can, you know, all kind of get the view of the rebel, the person who's the outsider. And that's another persona that's taken on to create this false sense of safety. So all of these roles we create in order to have our fundamental needs met as children. And they become part of our ego. So it's really helpful to understand which one of those you resonate with.
So do you feel like that happens with, what happens if a child grows up in a very like healthy household? Does it still take on one of those roles?
Yeah, there's definitely still elements that come in. They just might not be as strong. You know, a person that is raised in a household where there's clear boundaries and emotions are able to be expressed and there isn't codependency, right? Then this child is being raised with a really strong foundation of self, of who they are, how they can express themselves, the boundaries that they have set for themselves. Mm-hmm. So they might have, you know, bits and pieces of those four characteristics that might come in, you know, here and there.
But it doesn't run the show, like what you were saying.
Exactly.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. So then why would you say that releasing these old patterns and beliefs is important to take your life back?
So I would say that rather than releasing them, we're really bringing the awareness to them that they're a part of who we are. Because when we have the awareness of, oh, like, this is my ego kicking in right now. This is me needing to be the gifted one because I feel unsafe in this moment. And if I really take a step back and notice that I'm creating more disconnect by trying to show how perfect I am, that I can come back into my humanity and create space to connect again with whoever I'm really desiring to connect with.
I love, that's so beautiful. I love that. Yeah.
So it's the awareness of it. And also realizing, like I said, that there's two sides to the coin, that it gives us our superpower. Like as someone who you identified with being the caretaker, you're also an amazing person who looks after your friends.
Yes, I do.
Goes out of your way to be there for people. Mm-hmm. And what a gift. right?
Yeah, it is one of the most beautiful parts of me. I've had to shift that mentality for myself of seeing it as such a negative thing because it was so self-sacrificing so many times. But until I really started reining in the boundaries and understanding what you're talking about, then I can give from a place where I feel full, so it doesn't feel depleting.
Yeah, that's spot on. And that's where we start to find our balance. And also where we notice when we're in a trap, right? When you start to notice that you're getting depleted, that's when you say, oh, just a second, Natalia, I need to check in.
Right.
Where am I overextending? Where have I not set a boundary?
Yeah.
And then you come back and then you self-regulate.
Yeah. I love that. I want to talk more about like our experience together in the retreat in Mallorca. And so first I want to start off by asking, because I know that some people, like, you know, they see it in yoga studios or, you know, situations like that. And sometimes the cost can be, you know, a little bit much or things like that. But I mean, to me, it was it's priceless what you get from a retreat. But I want to know what your thoughts on the importance of a retreat. Why is it important for us to do retreats and go somewhere else and kind of just take that time for ourselves?
Yeah, this reason is exactly why I love creating them.
Oh my God. And she's a master, let me tell you.
Thank you. Thank you. When we take ourselves out of our day-to-day life, a familiar environment, usually we're in a routine of what we're doing, that makes our life very familiar in how it is. So when we remove ourselves from that and we're in a completely different environment that is inspirational, maybe it's a tropical environment or Mallorca where there's beautiful colors of the island.
Like, I remember going to Dea and it was like it's just the energy there. It's just like, I literally felt like I was on a cloud. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Dea is a truly magical place.
It is.
So it starts to shift us into a different part of our brain. It opens up the part of our brain that accesses potential and possibility. It's really hard for us to access that when we're in our day-to-day life because we're just so set on the next thing that needs to be done. And we're in this kind of, we have almost blinders on.
That makes sense.
But then you go on a retreat, you're in this new environment. And especially if it's an experience that is created to foster that development and growth, that all of these elements come together. And that's what I like to focus on, is how are we being nourished through all our senses? And when we're really in this place of nourishment and pleasure and delight, that's where we can start to access the possibility of what we want and start to go into that place of dreaming, right? Because we're in potential. It's possible.
Yeah.
So when we start to create the dream of our life in that place, it comes with inspiration. It comes with momentum. And especially if there's support once you leave that experience and go back to your life of then how to implement that, of how to actually make that actionable, then it's tangible in your life. But for the retreat experience itself, I love just giving people the snapshot of this is what is possible.
Yeah.
This is what is possible to feel this good in your body.
In your body, in your life. And that's something that I remember sharing with you. I don't know, since it was a while ago, if you remember, but I there were moments where I was like, Carolyn, like, this is a lot. Like, I can't believe, like, I was having kind of like an out of body experience. Like, I couldn't connect. My analytical brain just wanted to be like, no, this is wrong. You shouldn't be here. Like, this is way too good to be true. And there was a part of me the entire time that I was like, this is so much, but it was so nourishing.
Yeah. 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 I love that you just brought that up because it's a great example of how we cut ourselves off from experiencing that pleasure too. Of either we feel guilty about it or not fully deserving of it.
Yeah, like, who am I to be in this like private, you know, villa with like orange trees? I couldn't even believe that I had manifested something like that, right?
I know, and congratulations, you showed up.
Thank you. I did. I showed the fuck up. I did it. I made it happen. I was saying like that story about the ley lines and how with Audrey, with my best friend, that you mentioned it and how synchronistic it was and how we were just like, you know what, we're going to do it. And like, we just made it happen. And like, that's a testament to, I didn't have all the money in the world, you know, but because I had such a strong intention and my heart was calling for it and my soul was calling for it, I found it was possible.
Yeah. The first time I chose to go on a retreat with one of my longtime teachers, I was like, it was scary. I'm like, am I really going to spend this? Am I going to, what? Like, you can't do this. You've got da 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 da. And, you know, so to take the leap and give that to yourself is a huge investment in yourself. It's the greatest gift I think you can give yourself, that gift of experience, that gift of growth. And with that, I also want to say that if you're choosing to go on a retreat, know what your intention is around it. Totally. Like, what do you want to get out of it? And then make sure that that aligns with, you know, the experience you're choosing to go on and who you're choosing to go on a retreat with.
Yeah. And because the thing that I loved about ours is like that there were so many different elements, right? We visited different parts of Mallorca. We saw the culture. We tasted the food. Then we also had those moments where you led us through different, you know, subconscious, you know, work. And then you know, you're amazing. What do we call you? Me and Audrey, we call you the fire queen. She's like, she's like the fire whisperer. Like, I just, Carolyn is amazing. And how we all like sat in the, because there was like, I believe a full moon in Scorpio. And we celebrated the full moon and we honored all the different elements and placements of the earth. And it connected me so deeply to it. And then also, I remember that I believe it was Audrey that she was going through her moon cycle and that she, you know, that you shared that experience of getting actually connected to our period blood. And that was like huge for me. Can you talk a little bit more about how women aren't connected to that part of themselves and why it's so important to be?
Yeah. So much of this time that we're in is this reclaiming of our feminine energy. And with that, it's a reconnection to the earth. It's the reconnection to nature. It's the reconnection to the natural cycles of not just the seasons, but the natural cycles within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And as women, we've been gifted with this beautiful cycle of purification of our menstruation. And it's been, you know, so like demonized and over the years and so much stigma around it and shame around it that it's become a really painful time for a lot of women.
Yeah.
And that's just deeply sad. The first ceremony, blood ceremony that I went to, was so incredibly moving. Mm-hmm. It was such a moment of just releasing all of that shame, mm-hmm. and releasing that stigma around something that is not only so natural for us, but it's necessary to bring life into the world.
Yeah.
Right? And we know that the cells in our blood are so life-giving that it's actually incredible to use for gardening. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's all kinds of ways that it can be utilized. So that's a whole journey in itself to tap into.
Totally.
And what you're explaining from that ceremony and the full moon that we did, I'm really grateful to my mentors and who I've had the opportunity of learning from in different indigenous cultures, from Native American cultures to an elder I worked with who had Mongolian roots. And so this journey of really coming back to the earth, of honoring all of these beings, all the elements are related to as beings. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I love the most about that is that the sense of connection to everything that we have. around us, that we're never alone.
Right? Yeah,
I think
exactly.
So often we feel alone in this world. And even this past year in the pandemic and having a lot of alone time, you know, the way that I would just go out and speak to the trees and speak to the earth and commune in that way brings just so much peace and so much contentment.
Yeah. So I remember when I came back home and I got my period the first time after that ceremony, I cried for the first time because I'm one of those people that have very painful periods. And it was always just such a drama in my life. And I hated being a woman because I bled, you know, I was so disconnected from it. And I remember, like, because you mentioned something about just like getting the diva cup or the moon cup and like actually looking at it and like holding it. And even like, if you want to put it in the crops or put it in the, and I did all those things. I felt like a crazy witch, but I was like, I don't care. I was like, this is amazing. And I'm getting so connected to myself. And I cried. And I finally was able to see the value and the beauty of who I am as a woman and what value it actually has. Yeah, it was a big shift for me, especially because, you know, the retreat was based around being a goddess and what that entails and kind of rewriting his story, right? And bringing to light the beautiful women that have been a part of the journey that maybe aren't talked about in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big part of it. And I feel like that's even just a big part of my mission in life. And who I've sought out in teachers and mentors are women who are on that same path, and how I can help other women tap into that within themselves as well. And how we can start to reclaim that part of ourselves by reclaiming these stories.
Yeah.
And going to those places on the earth where, you know, Mallorca is one of those places, and Daya especially, where they honor the goddess, they honor the feminine, and there are these statues around the island. And, you know, so that was one of the main reasons why we went there, which was so special.
Yeah. What would you say is happening right now in society with femininity and view on femininity? Because what we experienced was very beautiful, but I feel like in, at least here in the United States, there's so much hardening around being the feminine, not fully understanding what that is. So I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Mm-hmm. There's in this, I like to think of this as energies too. So I'm going to talk about it in that way. And so the feminine energies are those of being, those of receiving, those qualities of the moon, of the shadow side, of darkness. And so there's that richness in that feminine quality of those energies. So I'm talking about this in energies rather than thinking of it as being in a body, if Correct. That is identified as like male or female.
Yeah, because we both have both feminine and masculine energy in all of us.
Right. So everyone has these energies and they are manifested in different ways. So our masculine energies are those more of like the producing, the acting, the sun side, that kind of energy. And so we're bringing these more into balance now. And it's kind of like what I touched on earlier of really appreciating that space to create, that space to restore, that space to be. Oh my gosh, there's moments where I'm like, I just want to be. I don't want to do anything. So that's all part of it. And I think women are reclaiming this. Men are reclaiming this. There's a new permission that, I want to say permission and power in this feminine energy that is now kind of being tapped back into. It's also part of the whole shift of the age of Aquarius that we're coming into. It's the balance of both masculine and feminine, where we've been in this patriarchal society before then. We were in a matriarchal society thousands of years before that. And now it's not a time of one or the other. It's really a time of both. It's a time of balance.
Right.
So that's what we're coming into.
Thank you so much for joining. If you found this podcast enlightening, please like, subscribe, share, and follow Power of Your Intuition _podcast on Instagram. This podcast is available on Spotify, Apple, and YouTube. And you can join my newsletter at nataliaochoa.com.